Moncrief on News Talk.
Your Holiness, I have made dozens of measurements of the sun's apparent size and luminosity. These do not correlate. Second, I have noticed the sun's position relative to this planet, receding on a short time scale. Third, I have observed more than one celestial body too bright to be a planet, moving relative to the fixed background of the stars. The only explanation for these observations is that this planet is part of a three-body star system.
That's the answer.
If our planet revolves around one of the suns in a stable orbit, that's a stable era. However, if one of the other suns snatches our planet away, we wander through the gravitational fields of all three suns. That's a chaotic era.
This is bullshit. Your Holiness, you're about to decide on our proposal?
Silence! I've heard enough. Burn her.
No.
There you go. That's the three-body problem. That's where the Pope decides on the fate of the world. the sound of it. You can stream all episodes of that of Series 1 right now on Netflix. James Dempsey is here once again to explain what the hell's going on here. It is complicated, but in fairness, they've made it understandable. I watched the first episode, I thought so anyway.
Well, I tried reading the book a while ago and I could make neither head nor tails nor elbows, knees and toes of it. To be honest with you, I found it very confusing and gave up. So I will say I could follow the whole series and understood. I think I understand what a three-body problem is now, which is something to do with the gravitational pull of three different things.
Yes.
Anyway,
yeah.
There you go.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
But this is big, glossy sci-fi, right? So it's a very, very well-known series of books by a Chinese writer named Liu Cixin, which kind of debuted maybe about 10 years ago in the English market. And it has been made into numerous, live action and animated shows in China already. And this was announced in 2020, not too long after the stain of Game of Thrones was beginning to wear off, shall we say, right? Because it comes from David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, who were the producers on that. And like, who, it must be acknowledged, made, you know, how many seasons are there, five or six? You know, made really good 80% of that show.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, apart from the last bit. Yeah.
And then it just sort of all fell apart at the end. And here I thought we get eight roughly hour-long episodes. And it is, I think that the plan is to turn the three novels into a four-season TV show. And it has these big lofty aspirations in terms of discussions about like physics and engineering and science and STEM, but also society and intercultural values and all this kind of stuff. Because the timeline is quite convoluted. It takes place in the 1960s in China during the Cultural Revolution. Mm. That's where we first are introduced to this woman named Ye Wenjie. And she's a physicist who ends up working at a SETI kind of thing, SETI being the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, with a big dish. And she basically manages to make contact, right? And I don't think that counts as a spoiler, genuinely, right? Anything thereafter kind of does. And I will say it moves in timeline, you know, sort of where we pick it up, I guess, in our contemporary timeline is scientists all over the world, particularly physicists, are taking their own lives in increasingly ghoulish and bizarre ways. And it all stems around the suicide of this young, 40-something scientist in Oxford and five of her former students, one of whom, who we heard there in that clip, where she's actually taking part in a very convoluted computer game, right?
Oh, right, okay. So, oh, yes, because they had that shiny helmet thing.
And that's before even I begin to start saying that people also start dehydrating themselves at points as well, right? Yeah. So all in, you need to be paying attention when you're watching this because half of it is in Mandarin and the other half of it is in, you know, quantum physics, which I don't speak either, right? So you have to pay attention. But what I do want to credit it for is if this was like being released on HBO on a weekly basis, right? By the time we get to sort of some of the big action set pieces, I think they would be real water cooler moment kind of stuff. But because it's on the Netflix schedule of all at once, I don't know if that's going to quite happen in the same way. But what I have to say is Benioff and Weiss, despite the kind of the failings at the end of Game of Thrones, they have this really deft hand at building tension and set pieces and action set pieces at that. Because there is one involving a ship kind of halfway through the season That's this like 10-minute long sequence that took my breath away with the scale of its like violence and craziness and oddness and bizarreness that I honestly think if it had been on a Sunday night, you know, it's like a red wedding moment, right? Like,
right,
it's this thing of like, oh my God, what am I watching, right? Mm. And they really do have a very good control of the world that they're in, despite the fact that this is really avant-garde, you know, sci-fi material. A lot of the complaints that have been leveled against it have been about changes that have been made, because a lot of the source material is quite different. This actually is my understanding, having not finished the book. The season of 8 episodes actually goes beyond the end of the first book and into the second book to introduce characters who will become more important later on. And it's okay. All, I guess you have to look at this one as being set up, right? This is all just laying all the pieces and trying to explain who the people are. And what you have to hand it to is they understand how to curry favour with their old sort of Game of Thrones cast, because you have Liam Cunningham in quite this big role.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you also heard playing the Pope there, Conleth Hill, who was Viserys in that.
All right.
And like, there's loads of cameos from different people who have appeared in Game of Thrones as well. The main cast are a lot of kind of unknowns to me. We heard there Jess Hong, who's a Kiwi actress. She plays Jing Chen, who is a gender flipped character. I think is male in the novels. Benedict Wong, who's probably best known of late as being in Doctor Strange and various Marvel properties. He's a kind of comic relief muscle. He plays Dashi. And then John Bradley, who you'd know as well from Game of Thrones, plays Jack Rooney. But basically, there's a load of people in it that you do recognize from various things. But perhaps where it falls down a little bit in comparison to Game of Thrones, which I shouldn't really be comparing, you know, they're not apples. These are apples and oranges.
Yeah.
But what Game of Thrones really, really had well was a sense of all who the characters were from the beginning, right? And of course, they change throughout, but you as a viewer get to appreciate that change. Here, not only are we being treated to a million different characters and computer simulations and alien intelligences and quantum mechanics, but also we have comic relief, right? So it all just feels kind of pushed in and shoved together and kind of blended into something.
Mm.
And by the end, it is a satisfying, but not absolutely brilliant, but good setup for what's coming next, I hope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the first series really feels like a setup for the second series.
I think so, yeah. That's the impression I'm getting anyway. And certainly there's a pivotal moment towards the end, which is a conversation on a bench, which is supposed to sort of, if you know, you know, and I don't know. So I don't know, but it's sort of planting a seed for something that percolates throughout the whole rest of the series, and my understanding of which it will be moving forward into like the future 200 years, 400 years and so on, that it's this big grand space opera all set on Earth that takes place over multiple timelines.
Right, okay, yeah.
It's a lot of homework.
It's a lot of homework to do, yeah. Though I did notice that when we're at the original during the Cultural Revolution, that young woman who's brought into the place, and then we see her again as a much older woman, in England, and I don't know the woman's name, but she used to play. She used to be Keiko O'Brien in Star Trek. She was
she's Rosalind Chow.
She was Colin Meaney's wife.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so that's a kind of a vague Irish connection there.
Good to know.
Right. Okay, we'll move on to our second show. It is X-Men 97. New episodes every Wednesday on Disney Plus. Here's a clip.
I need to tell you something, and I need you not to judge me too harshly, or tell Scott.
You have my word, Jean.
There are times when I think about the baby, his future, and I... If he's a mutant, how do I tell him he's different? That the world will remind him of it every day. That he must always be careful, always be on guard, or else...
You wish him to be born human. I have wondered what it would be like to be human. It is a tempting daydream. But then I remember how my mutant gifts brought me to this mansion... to this family, to a sister.
Thank you, Storm. Oh, just ever since I was in Gyrick's mind, I can't shake this feeling that something terrible is coming. Boy, do I sound like a fool.
No, Jean. You sound like a mother.
There you go. That's X-Men 97. This is an animated series, we should point out.
This is an animated series, and it's a reboot of the X-Men animated series that ran from 1992 to 1996 officially, but I think the final episode actually aired in 1997. And it is just an immediate follow-on from that. And there's something very humbling about reaching an age where you realise you are certainly, like, your childhood is now being pandered to in the nostalgia bubble. And certainly that is what's happening for me, because I am part of, you know, I grew up watching that cartoon, playing in the background, you know, in back gardens, being a mutant, etc. And certainly for me, that, because, you know, there was no comic book store in my, you know, Trim where I grew up. So this was the kind of my introduction to, like, the Marvel universe in general. Yeah. And now it has gone from me watching it, I think used to be on Live and Kicking on Saturday mornings on the BBC, like in the 90s, to that now being this absolutely $1 billion, almost culturally past it, actually, at some points, behemoth of entertainment value. So when they announced this, I was really, really intrigued. And especially because, like, animation and superheroics animation are going through a bit of a moment as well with Invincible on Amazon, which is really, really, really strong. Mm. And this seemed very intriguing. And the whole point of it was the creator of it, a guy named Beau DeMeo, who was promptly not fired but let go a couple of days before it debuted last week for unknown reasons. So
okay.
Speculation is rife. But when he sort of pitched this, he wanted to get as much of the original voice cast back as possible.
Yeah.
So who we heard, like, playing Storm there, Alison Seeley Smith, like, she iconically voiced it in the 90s cartoon, and there she is back again, even recording in the same studio. And I didn't realize before I did my research, but Cal Dodd, the guy who voiced Wolverine saying bub all the time, was actually born in Dublin. find the local angle, right? So in it, the story is an immediate follow-on from when the season ended. And when that season ended, Professor Charles Xavier survived an assassination attempt but left to join the Shi'ar Empire, who said they could rescue him. It's all a bit three-body problem, right?
Yeah, okay.
And in this version of it, it's a year later, and the X-Men are under the guidance of Cyclops, Scott Summers, and Jean Grey is pregnant, and it's going to rehash various X-Men stories, right? Now, what does it have that the original had? It still has the incredible theme tune. And even, I have to hand it to the guy who wrote that. His name is Ron Wasserman. He wrote the theme tune to X-Men, to the Power Rangers, and to Sweet Valley High. And if you were a child in the 90s, they were stuck in your head till the 2000s. And the show sort of has that same kind of animated 2D style, obviously, but with a contemporary flair, which means that the action scenes are obviously much more exciting and breathtaking and entertaining than they were in the 90s.
Mm.
While they've also toned down a lot of the, like, because if you watch the 90s cartoon, let's say the female curves are curvy.
Yes.
And the kind of latent homoeroticism is, like, pretty much there as well. So they've sort of sanded all that down to a more respectable way. But look, I have to admit, going in, I had my expectations for this were, like, at rock bottom, because I thought, okay, Marvel is going through a very awkward phase at the moment where nothing is sort of hitting, and I didn't expect this to hit. And I really enjoyed it. It was silly and camp. It's set in the 90s, so, like, there's a bit in the opening episode where they're fighting in a factory that seems to be making rollerblades, and someone is, like, tossing a rollerblade at someone else's head, and it just makes all these kind of naff 90s jokes which do completely pander to my childhood, but it turns out that is annoyingly funny.
Yes. Who's it for? Is it just to pander to your childhood, James?
I don't know.
Or,
I mean, look,
generation
I guess, yes, certainly, right, it is absolutely for millennials, definitely. And I guess X-Men is now back in the fold of Disney. When they acquired Fox, they got the rights back to that. So they are going to be relaunching some version of the X-Men in some cinematic universe at some point very, very soon. So this is all building into that whole superhero spandex world, of which there are still many, many, many fans, even if critically it's going through the doldrums at the moment. This, I think, is for people who fondly remember the theme tune of the animated show from the 90s, which really is a banger. And also those who want to watch something a bit like Invincible, but with less blood.
Okay, just going back to the three-body problem. Someone says it's a fantastic adaptation of the book. Someone else says there was a lot of controversy over the guy who originally bought the TV rights to the book was poisoned.
Oh, right. Didn't hear that.
Yeah. Must investigate that a bit further. Anyway, time to continue dredging into James Dempsey's youth. This is called Girls 5 Ever. You can stream all three seasons now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
Good morning, my beautiful girls. Look who's FaceTiming.
Oh, it's Pam. Hey, Pam.
Hey, I hear you have a big performance tonight.
Oh, yeah, we do.
I just want to say I'm super excited for you. You're going to do great.
Oh, thank you, honey bunny.
So have a great show and congratulations to all. Because Kev from The Boys Next Door thinks you're too pretty for college.
This has a cameo? She bought a cameo from her husband to make us think he's FaceTiming. Good Lord.
So thanks for being a fan, stranger.
Oh, wow. Okay. Hi. Good morning.
Hi. Okay. Show's tonight. Where's Gloria?
Okay, let's rehearse.
Let's rehearse. Where are you?
I'm in the office. I have an emergency tooth abscess.
Come on, Gloria.
Does this look like it can wait?
Oh,
gross. But I can do both. Because he's sedated, so.
Ooh.
All right.
Oh.
Let's go. Dream girlfriends. One, two, three, and.
Ooh. Right. Okay. That's Girls 5 Ever. All three seasons available now on Netflix.
Mm.
It's a comedy.
It's
I'm
a sitcom.
Hoping. Yes,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a sitcom from Meredith Scardino, who was a writer on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt and Mr. Mayor, which was also created by Tina Fey. So when I was watching this, like, there's actually not that many episodes. It was originally made for Peacock, the NBC kind of streaming network. And they cancelled it after its second season. It was a COVID kind of COVID replacement kind of thing. And then Netflix picked it back up to make a third. But across the three episodes, there's maybe only 22 episodes, which is unusual for American sitcoms, which often run for many, many more. But if you have ever watched or appreciated any of the Tina Fey oeuvre, you will immediately be able to get into the show because it is absolutely cut from that cloth in terms of its style, its comedy, its jokes, even its musical cues. Now, it's about a girl band from the early 2000s called Girls 5 Ever, who had a one-hit wonder, and then this modern rapper samples the song and they get this chance to maybe find fame again.
Okay.
And the first season is about them getting back together. The second season is about recording an album, and the third season is about going on tour. And into that comes various different archetypal characters. So Sarah Bareilles is Dawn. She's kind of the straight man in the group. She herself is a Broadway actress. She's been Tony nominated a couple of times, but is a songwriter as much as a performer. She wrote like the musical, I think it's the book of the SpongeBob musical, and like understands, how to write a funny song. Probably the standout is Renee Elise Goldsberry, who is probably best known to us anyway for her roles, for her role in Hamilton, where she's one of the Schuyler sisters, I think that's how you pronounce that. And but she did appear a lot in The Good Wife as opposing counsel, inevitably losing.
Yeah.
And she plays Wiki, who is the kind of the one who held on to fame the longest and increasingly has these, hilariously silly anecdotes about various things they did. It is a retro pastiche of the 2000s, so I literally have got from, from my childhood to my...
are the product, James.
Yeah,
that's what we're seeing here.
And a three-body problem would suggest the future is not looking great, right? But basically, it is a really funny retro pastiche of the early 2000s and that moment in pop music in particular.
Mm.
And there are brilliant...
Is it set in the early 2000s or that's when they had the hit, but now it's so many years later?
Yeah, so it's set in contemporary times, but they're always flashing back to the various things they did at that time. And it is brilliantly inventive in it with its music as well, right? Obviously, if it's a show about a pop band and it's a comedy, there's going to be hilarious songs throughout.
Mm.
I mean, I almost cut as a clip. There's this a scene where she's trying to write a song using all 400 definitions of the word set in one go and it just goes on and on and on and on. It's really... very funny. It's very silly. It's very short. It's very watchable. And like, I devoured the whole thing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, can't say worse than that. Is X-Men 97 appropriate for children? Somebody wants to know.
Look, I mean, I was watching X-Men when I was a child, and it's more tame than that. I guess you could probably start with the original cartoon, of which the five seasons are there anyway, because you need to understand what has roughly happened in that before you get to this one. Because it is an immediate follow-on, that's what I would say.
Okay, right. So there was three shows we were talking about today were The Three-Body Problem. You can stream all of season one on Netflix. X-Men 97, new episodes every Wednesday on Disney+. And Girls 5 Eva, you can stream all three seasons now on Netflix. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.